Thanks for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. We are in anticipation of some announcement that's coming in from the government, particularly from some ministries that look into economic restructuring, attracting investment, and trying to create high-paying jobs. There's a lot that is going to be expected to be announced this morning. So we'd like to revisit some of the ideas that has been long-standing in Malaysia, particularly on how to create a good environment for startup economy, digital economy, and try to boost the training and capacity building of Malaysia. Joining us is Aaron Sarma. He's a general partner at Scale Up Malaysia. He joins us from Kuala Lumpur. Aaron, let's look into how we can develop high-value strategic industries in contributing to increasing competitiveness and innovation in the country. Do you feel that it's interesting for us to start to seriously look at Malaysia as the center for growing our digital economy, for instance?
So, hey, good morning, Ibrahim. I think we're making this a habit to kind of talk about things before they launch. So I'm really excited for this conversation today.
You are the person with the crystal ball. So it's always important to speak to you first before they announce stuff.
I'll take my soothsayer reputation a bit more seriously now. Okay, so for today, I think we're talking about positioning Malaysia as like a digital leader in the overall ecosystem in the region. I'll say one thing, this is not the first time we've wanted to do this. We've said we wanted to be the regional leader for some time now, all the way back to the late 90s, but it still remains important. So it's not to say that we should not try to position ourselves that way. I've always maintained that Malaysia is actually very strategically positioned to be the regional leader simply because we've got a growing middle class, high internet penetration, great access to information and education. Our talent is very, very robust. They're very diverse in terms of skill sets.
Play in the region. Not to mention also, we're located in a very strategic place in the region, being the center of everything that happens in Southeast Asia. So I think it's important that we kind of look at it this way and position ourselves this way. And we have a real opportunity to be and perform this role over the next couple of years and be that player that every looks to for support.
You know, when you type Google, when you type in the Google Malaysia Hub and then leave it blank, the drop down, I literally just did this. Malaysia Hub Education, Malaysia Hub Halal, Malaysia Hub Startup. Seems like we're a hub for a lot of things. And you're right, while everything starts in earnest and with good intentions, it seems very hard for us to crystallize as being really the hub for something. As opposed to, say, for instance, and I hate to mention this again and again, Singapore, where, you know, we know that they are the hub for investment, for growth, for financial markets, for many more. And we all know that Singapore, for instance, is really the center point of money for this region. And then if you type Thailand hub automotive, Indonesia or Jakarta hub startup or Bukalapa or any of the unicorns there. Do you feel that there is a sense of skepticism the moment the government says, okay, we're going to do something and we're going to call us the center of something or the hub of something, do you feel that this time it's going to be a bit different or that level of skepticism is still high?
I think every time somebody announces that there's going to be a new thing that's launched, there's a natural need to be skeptical. Because as you rightly listed out, we've been the hub of many dozen things over the last decade or so, right? And of course, we want to know, will this new announcement or this new proclamation result in meaningful change? But I think one thing that we should focus on is that Malaysia is in desperate need of a narrative. We need to know what we stand for as a nation, especially when it comes to digital economy. So like if you look at our neighbors, and I was in a conversation with somebody just last week, we had a panel session, but we were just talking about this as well. If you look at like at Vietnam, for example, Vietnam has clearly positioned themselves as the China outsourcing a hub of Southeast Asia. If you look at Singapore, they've clearly positioned themselves as the financial hub of Southeast Asia. Indonesia says, we're the largest market in Southeast Asia. Come to us, you can build a unicorn there. So what's Malaysia's story? Why do we exist as a digital economy? What is our purpose? And I think this is where the government should show leadership and can show leadership. But whatever is announced today, we need to make sure that there is a clarity of focus and execution. One thing I've always felt is a challenge in this country is that we have great proclamations and great plans. A couple of years ago, we launched some blueprints and stuff in the digital economy. But when it comes to execution, it's either under-resourced or it's spread. The resources are spread over too many agencies for us to truly make an impact. So I think we've got great ideas. We've got the right idea. But where we kind of fall is where, when it comes time to execute these ideas and our ability to actually make it happen.
Do you feel that changes in policy is the one that really disrupted our so-called narrative? The change of governments, for instance, over the past 5-6 years, the change of the planners and the executors. Now that we have, in a lot of ways, a more stable government, a clarity of ideas of where we should be heading forward in the next 3 to 4 years before the next general election, now is a good time for us to see who are the executors, and you know the days are brighter ahead of us because of the volatility on the political climate is actually quite abating right now. Do you feel that that is the case?
Yeah, I guess I'm an eternal optimist, and I think this is the best time to be an optimist. With the, I guess, the deck kind of reshuffled, and we have a new batch of leaders in place. To your point earlier, I do agree. I think the changes in government has had a negative impact on the ecosystem, simply because policies tend to shift and change with every new batch of leadership that comes in. And it's not just in the political class, which obviously is an issue, but also in the leadership classes of all the agencies, right? We'll see changes in CEOs or CEO positions left vacant for a prolonged period. We also will see new changes of boards, and with the new changes of boards, there'll be new directions for these agencies, and you know, new execution policies may change as well. So having a locked-in leadership for at least the next couple of years will ensure that whatever policies are decided will actually come to pass, and will actually, you know, will actually be able to see the fruition of those ideas for good or ill, right? You know, they may not work, but at least we'll see a consistent execution of these ideas that we're announcing hopefully in the next day or so.
Every 10 years, every decade or so, we come across a very innovative and very aggressive innovator and entrepreneur. Previous decades, we saw how Tan Sri Tony Fernandes reshaped aviation. Very recently, we've seen how, say, for instance, Karsem or Kamarul of Aerodyne has pushed ahead. When I meet them at these, you know, open houses very recently, right, a few weeks ago, what's the secret sauce? All of them say the same thing, which is to grow their business in other markets outside Malaysia. They can be a Malaysian company, they can set up shop here in Malaysia, but the focus has always been in trying to capture audiences and consumers outside of Malaysia. Do you feel that that is the case for companies to grow and build that digital economy where we need to have strong infrastructure domestically, but then, you know, the moolah is elsewhere? Is that the way forward?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And, you know, just talking about Tan Sri Tony, about Eric, about Kamarul, these are great entrepreneurs who've really built large businesses outside of Malaysia. And it's, I think, no fault of Malaysia as a market. But I think we also need to be very transparent and honest about the shortcomings of Malaysia as a market. We're not as big as we think we are. We always kind of lull ourselves into this, how shall we say, this this sense of comfort that we're bigger than Singapore. We've got 30 million people, but really it's not a large market to build a billion-dollar company or a large innovative business. You have to go out. And so I think Malaysian entrepreneurs need to see this as something that is the only path to build those large businesses is to go out of Malaysia, build a business in Indonesia or in Thailand or in the Philippines or in Vietnam. And that's kind of how you build strong and large sustainable companies. Malaysia is a great place to call your base because, as I mentioned earlier, we've got talent, we've got infrastructure, we've got the people here who can actually build these businesses locally. But in terms of capital, in terms of expansion opportunities, it's really out there. And you know, typically, if you look at investors and stakeholders outside Malaysia, when they look at Malaysian entrepreneurs, we are actually regarded with quite high regard. They say like Malaysian entrepreneurs are actually very resourceful, very good with P&Ls, very good with return on capital, and very efficient in building their businesses. And so that's why Malaysian entrepreneurs tend to thrive, especially when they get out of Malaysia into other markets.
So there is a dichotomy between Malaysian entrepreneurs versus the Malaysian market, and we have to acknowledge that, and it's important for us to be honest, as you say, about the limitations that we have as a market. Because of this...
Yeah, I mean, we're 30 million people, right, or thereabout, but that's not a sizable market, especially if you're doing consumer products like aviation, for example. It's not really 30 million people. It's probably, 3 million people who can make purchase decisions to actually travel. So it's relatively small, which is kind of similar-ish then if you talk about in those ways to like Singapore. We're also a very non-homogeneous market, right? We have different cultures within the market, different languages are spoken, different sub-genres of interests are also there. So building products around this also can be complicated because you don't have that one market that speaks the same language and has the same kind of cultural benefit. So these are challenges within Malaysia. But it's also an advantage because our entrepreneurs actually know how to navigate multicultural societies, which is why Tony has been able to build a multicultural businesses, and so has Eric, and even Kamarul has done that as well.
Some of my friends have actually moved places to Jakarta, to Singapore, to Ho Chi Minh, and they argue that these cities are very conducive for foreign workers like themselves, they're Malaysians mostly, to live and work, particularly in the space of the digital economy. Do you feel that that is an area of importance should the government announce something later this week or later today, that building digital talent and using Kuala Lumpur as the regional hub for startups and the digital industry is actually quite crucial. Must, say, for instance, laws towards attracting digital talent change in order for us to be as facilitative, if not at the same level of these three cities right now?
I'm glad you said it, right? I think the thing that is the most important thing we could do is attracting digital talent to Malaysia. It is, I think, agenda number one. I know we've talked about capital, we've talked about regulatory support, we've talked about government intervention, we've talked about agencies, but if there was one thing we could do, if I had a wish list of things we could do, is attract talent into Malaysia who want to build businesses there. And the example is not very far off. Look at Singapore, right? We talked about it just now, right? Singapore's entrepreneurship ecosystem is made up of non-Singaporeans who are building large businesses in Singapore. That's also the story in Silicon Valley. The best startups are all founded by people who are not from the US, but they were attracted into the market to build those businesses. And so if we think this way, that we're not only trying to blossom local talent, but import talent who can then overflow into the local market and raise other local talent as a byproduct, that is a much more impactful way for us to supercharge our digital economy than just hoping and praying our local guys will be able to kind of rise to the occasion. So we need very progressive policies to bring in top entrepreneurs, the best developers, the best thinkers to come to Malaysia and set up shop here and call Malaysia home. Because by doing this, we'll be able to build that large economy we've always dreamed of and hoped for.
One area of interest that I want to be looking at, should the government announce anything today or this week, is on the exact regulatory changes or regulatory support that the government is going to introduce. Perhaps some amalgamation of the governmental agencies that currently exist. I can imagine there's a lot of overlap between one another. And I hate to point it out because many of them, my friends, are working in some of these kind of agencies. So, in a way, calling these agencies out might not necessarily be conducive for us to try to see how we can build the industry together. But do you feel that these are the areas of concern that we need to be looked at when it comes to the announcement of the proclamations of the government this week or today? Do you feel that where the devil lies in the details, where is it that the changes have to be done or the changes are going to be done? Do you feel that that kind of importance must be given some thought into regulatory changes right now?
Yeah, I think this is a very interesting point. And like you, I also have a lot of friends also who work in these agencies. A lot of them are great people who gave up good jobs outside to do some good and serve the nation. And so I completely empathize with their position and the fact that they want to ensure the agency is able to sustain and grow and kind of be an impactful agency in the market, right? But what we've also heard, right, is that there is a need to kind of streamline the agencies. And even in the last budget in February, there was some talk about more streamlining within the agencies. And I think that's important, right? Over the last few months, I've not really heard any movement in this regard, but I think it's important. And I'll tell you why, right? Number one, as a nation, we mentioned earlier, we need to be very efficient with our execution. So if there's a policy that goes out, we cannot be spreading that policy over multiple agencies and expecting it to be successful, because then everybody takes their own piece of the pie and tries to execute it. And then obviously there's iterations and there's ideas that are gleamed on top of it. There's merging with existing programs. And then what you get is kind of a hodgepodge kind of solution that goes out there, not really achieving the initial objective of the policy. Right, that's one thing. The other thing is in terms of capital, right? We have limited capital in the government. I don't expect the government, as if I were in the Ministry of Finance today, to deploy unlimited amounts of capital into the startup or digital economy ecosystem, hoping to see results. I want to make sure that the ecosystem is efficient, right? But we are not efficient if we're deploying little bits of capital in multiple agencies and hoping to see results. Everybody is kind of fighting with one hand behind their back, hoping to make an impact. And that's a bit of a challenge. And the other thing is, what as a natural cause of the way budgets work in general, not just in the government, but also in all organizations, is that every agency will want to ensure that they're able to have enough capital to continue as a going concern. And so what happens is there's a tendency to kind of empire build and go beyond the existing scope. So if there's one thing that's important is that we need to streamline. I don't know if it's feasible or possible to merge multiple agencies in the next 12 months or so. It may be very difficult. What we certainly need is some sort of umpire or referee to say, like, look, this is what you do, this is what you don't do. And what will really help is if a lot of these digital agencies fall under one ministry or one minister to lead the charge. Because right now they're spread over multiple ministries, and that also adds to the complexity of this.
It's interesting that you point that out, because even within, let's face it, yeah, the real politic now comes in. If that is the most efficient way to do it, and if a minister puts up his hand or her hand, you know what, it's easier to amalgamate everything under me, then his own peers or her own peers are going to be up in arms, because everybody will be saying, wait a minute, what makes, who died and made you the king? You know what I mean? So that is the issue right now. So do you feel that the arbiter has to be, say, for instance, the prime minister, who overlooks the entire thing and just dictates, you know what, this is the thing that has to be done and all of you have to live with it? Do you feel that that, you know, some level of dictatorialship is needed, I suppose?
I think so. I think some sort of, like, overarching focus or, like directive needs to be given so that every falls into place and executes accordingly. A good example, right, is things like Cyberjaya and Putrajaya, right? It was a national project. The government stepped in and said, no, this is what we're going to do. The Prime Minister himself drove that initiative through MDC back in the day, which is now actually MDEC, interestingly enough. And now we have two cities in the middle of what was used to be a palm oil plantation who are doing decently interesting things over there. So a lot of things that happen in Malaysia happen because of kind of government initiatives, and in more cases than not, the really big initiatives happen because the Prime Minister's office tends to step in and take the charge. And so I think that's really something that we need to look into. Even though I understand the sensitivities around it, I know it's not a very popular thing to say, but if we want big impact, this is what's needed.
Okay, thanks, Aaron, for joining us. Final comments, Aaron, in terms of, I guess, your wish list. I know you have elaborated at length, but what would be some of the, I guess, two or three things that you really want to look at on a personal basis, I suppose, in the announcement? Is capital one of them? Is talent one of them? Or, you know, is it something else?
Yeah, I think we mentioned earlier, definitely the ability to attract, retain and train talent in the market, something that I'll be looking forward to. The willingness for us to kind of get capital in and to make it a very capital-friendly environment, the ability to nurture entrepreneurs in the digital space and digital talent, that would be something that's very important to me. And entrepreneurs is a subset of people who can build businesses with the idea that, you know, they've got enough of a safety net to take risks, because that's what's really important. And having the government able to propel them, not just in Malaysia, but regionally as well. I'd like to end just by saying that I am very hopeful that we'll have some good policies out. And I'm very hopeful that the next year will be positive for the country, especially in the digital economy. So I'm looking forward to see it. I'm always an optimist. And if things work out, we'll be here to cheer it on. And if things don't, then we're here to help as well.
Thank you very much, Aaron Sarma, the forever optimist friend of ours of the show. He's a general partner at Scale Up Malaysia, joining us from a hotel lobby in Kuala Lumpur. That's amazing, man, how you can multitask.
Undisclosed location today.
Undisclosed location. Oh, well, I guess you can take some cut from that particular hotel and then you can promote that particular hotel on air. Thank you very much, Aaron, for being with us this morning.